From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanti Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And in today's segment, we are going to listen to a talk by Brother Arvind. Arvind needs no introduction to the Radio Sai listeners. All of you heard him just a few minutes ago with Brother Prem in the afternoon satsang. And this talk is on the theme, Make God the First Priority in Life. This talk was delivered in the Satsang Hall on the 11th of April 2016. Stay tuned, dear listeners, for after the talk, you will be treated to some beautiful bhajans from the album Bhavanjali Volume 2, followed by the live Telugu segment Sri Satya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari at 3:30 p.m. For now, over to Brother Arvind.
Offering my most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dearest Swami, respected elders, dear brothers and sisters, whenever we get the opportunity to speak in Bhagwan's presence, we always prostrate before him before the talk, seek his blessings, and whenever I get the opportunity, I pray to him, Swami, please speak through me, please you make the speech. Even before the speech is actually made, we offer it to Swami. We want him to take over. While it is very nice and appreciable, from one perspective it looks like a kind of escapism, like you are trying to take away all the responsibilities that you have towards preparing a speech, ensuring that it is delivered well. You just say, Swami, all the praise and blame is left to you. You do as you please. I don't care what the world thinks, Swami, as long as you're happy. I want you to be happy. It looks like then I can do whatever I want and get away with it, because I'm not doing it to please the audience. I don't care about the world. I'm only seeking Swami's happiness. It looks like escapism only if we forget that Bhagwan's standards are very high. It is often said that you need not bother about pleasing the world, just please God, it's enough. Because pleasing God is not so easy. It's not so easy at all. On a lighter note, when I had to join Radio Sai, when Swami told me to join Radio Sai, he told me, go make Venkatraman happy. Swami will be happy. And so that was the way he told me to join Radio Sai. I went and told to Venkatraman sir that, sir, Swami has said like this. Then he told me, Swami said like that because he knows that you can please Swami, but it's very tough to please me. So he said he is a tougher taskmaster than Swami, and that's why Swami said like that. So also when we say that, don't bother about the world, just please Swami, that's enough. It doesn't mean that it's an escapism. It means greater responsibility. It means greater dedication is required, greater determination is required. On the similar note, you know, the other day I was just reading the glorious concepts that are there in the Bharatiya tradition. Nowadays we have many people who say, you know, I don't want to get married. It's too much of a burden. I want to be free. I want to be wandering. I'm a modern day yogi. Because, you know, there is this kind of a feeling that, yeah, though the yogi, though the wandering gypsy nomad has some physical difficulties, may not have an air conditioning at home, may not be very comfortable, but more or less he's free of all the burdens. So it's better, why to get into this samsara only, no need. Let's be a yogi. We use yogi as a way to escape family. Swami has given a hierarchy. Says the smallest part of the hierarchy is the individual. The individual is a part of society. Society is a part of nature. And nature is a part of God. He says Vyashti is part of Samashti. Samashti is part of Srishti. And Srishti is part of Parameshti, which is God. So when we are young and when we are growing, we have responsibility only towards ourselves, Vyashti. As we physically grow, if we also want to grow in the spiritual sense, we have to undertake responsibilities larger than our own little selves. That is the reason why the institution of marriage is held so highly. Because now you are no longer thinking of only your little self. You are still selfish in the sense that we may think that it is our family. But at least we have grown from thinking about me to my family at least. Possibly my better half, my children, my parents, at least I have grown a little broader. So from that perspective, when a person decides to dedicate himself in social work and says, I can't allow marriage to come in the way, it's not that he is not married. He's just married to something larger. He can give up taking up responsibilities towards a family when he is ready for a higher responsibility. In a company also, if you join as a clerk, you can give up clerical duties only when you go higher and take up higher duties. So therefore, if a person is actively involved in social work and therefore is not marrying, it doesn't mean he escaped family. He has just taken on greater responsibilities. And then we have the yogis who take up responsibility not at the samashti, not at the srishti level, but possibly at the parameshti level. It's not escapism. It has become like that because possibly many people do like that in the modern day. But becoming a yogi meant being ready to take on the greatest responsibility and therefore being ready for the greatest sacrifices. Compared to when I'm single, when I'm married and I have a family, I have to make more sacrifices. When I take up working for society, I have to make greater sacrifices. When I'm with the family, there are sacrifices at the individual level. When I take up societal causes, there are sacrifices at the family level, greater sacrifices at the individual level. When you go higher, then there are sacrifices at the societal level, greater sacrifices at the family level, greatest sacrifices at the individual level. That's why we see, that what we see happens in the case of all, whomever, you know, talk of Buddha or talk of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, talk of Ramana Maharshi. That is what it is, not escapism. It is taking on a higher duty. So too, you know, today's theme is making God our first priority and first resort. We've often heard of turning to God as the last resort. So when we say let's turn to God as the first resort, just like there is a tendency to mistake a yogi for a lazy fellow who is just giving up responsibilities, it might be mistaken that taking God for the first resort means, I will not do anything. God, you take care. If it is God, it's all blamed on you. It's not that way. You know, we have often seen of people turning to God as a last resort. The other day I came to know of the experience of a certain Devdas. His name at home is Mr. Roshan. He was born in 1976 in Mauritius. And as a child, he was diagnosed with ALL. ALL stands for acute lymphoblastic leukemia. It's a kind of blood cancer where the lymphocytes, one kind of cell, are produced in large numbers in a cancerous manner. They interfere in the working of all other cells. Today, ALL is manageable. It's also treatable and wholly curable. But today is 2016. In those days, a realistic chance of survival was about 9 to 10% in the 1970s. Medical science had not advanced so much. And it can get very dangerous and it affects usually the little ones. So Roshan was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia. Actually, there's an entire story about this on Radio Sai, where also the doctor's certificates, what they have printed, what they have written. There's one Dr. Tank, she was treating him. He was admitted in one of the best children's hospitals in London. I think that hospital is located on Ormond Street. And there they said, yeah, we have done everything possible. It's a very painful and long treatment, radiation, chemotherapy. Yeah, this is all we have done. Now we just hope, we pray that he improves. This hope, whenever a doctor says hope and pray, unless he is a devoted doctor in the sense that he's saying that because of his faith in the Lord, in all other cases when a doctor says let's hope and pray, it means that I can't do anything else now. You know, it's all left to God. I have done my best, now God has to do the rest, otherwise that's it. That's all it is. It means the doctor has turned to the last resort. Now it's God. That's why. Because medically we have done everything possible. In fact, every doctor in the ancient Bharatiya scriptures, no doctor ever claimed to heal a patient. He would say that Vaidya Narayano Harihi. Only the Lord is the healer. I'm just an instrument. I'm just dispensing medicines and giving advice. The healing has to be done by the Lord. Somewhere down the line we have forgotten that. And therefore we turn to God as a last resort. Because if we truly believe that I am just a dispenser of medicines and the healer is the Lord will always be the first resort because he is the only healer. I am just a dispenser of medicines. But somewhere along the line we feel we are the healers. So we feel that we'll do our best. Don't worry. The child will be saved. The child will be fine. Oh, things are going bad. To finally saying we have done our best. We can only hope. We can only pray. Because the Lord is the last resort. That's what happened in the case of Roshan. And when his father heard this, he felt very depressed. He decided to go out for a walk. He just walked out of the hospital. They would take back their child home. As he's walking, a few meters away, he comes across singing. Bhajans are going on. And coincidentally, on that very street, there was a Sai center. And the bhajans were on. He walked in. He sat there for the bhajans. He saw the picture of Swami. He remembered having seen that picture on a book somebody had given him some time ago. He just felt a little calm sitting and listening to those bhajans. He sat for the bhajans. After sitting for the bhajans, after the aarti got over, the people there were, you know, they saw that this was a newcomer, so they went and spoke to him. He just broke down telling them of the difficult situation he's in with regards to his child. They just all together prayed for him. And gave him a garland of roses that was on Swami's photo and said, yeah, you take this as prasad, pray, take vibhuti. Let's all pray, let's see. He walks back to the hospital and he kept this garland next to his son. A few hours later, before the discharge, they saw that the entire sheet was red with blood. And the doctors were summoned. Instantly they came running. They were wondering what's happening. Where is this boy bleeding from? And they checked. No, the boy was not bleeding from anywhere. Where did his blood come from? They traced back. The roses are bleeding there. And they were really shocked by this bizarre happening. They discharged the boy because they didn't know, they couldn't explain it. That's what we usually do when we see a miracle. Instead of filling ourselves with thrill and delight that this is the Lord's glory, we just get puzzled and think that, oh, okay, this is something, we'll see, we'll try to find out what this. We have not yet been able to explain it, we'll explain it later. That's what we think. So that was what happened and they discharged him. But strangely, this bleeding of roses gave some strength to the parents. They were hoping that some miracle may happen. That was when again, a few weeks later, Roshan became very sick. And he got up and he told his parents that, you know, a man with fuzzy hair in an orange robe came to me. I could see him in a rose flower there. And this was the same Sai Baba that his father had seen. So they were very thrilled. But he had gotten very sick. So they took him to the hospital again. And the doctor's report at that time is also with us at Radio Sai. They've added there that because of this cancer treatment or whatever, the boy is now hallucinating also. That's what they have written. He's suffering from hallucination. But the father, you know, he was somehow convinced this is not a hallucination. This is not hallucination at all. That was when Swami comes in the father's dream and says, you come, I'm waiting for you, well, let's meet in India. That's it. whatever the doctor may write officially in the report, whatever they may sign off, no problem. The father makes the trip to India in 1979. Doesn't know anything. It's very tough to come to Prashanthinilayam. He comes, he arrives at Prashanthinilayam. He comes to the Darshan Hall, he's sitting there. And he's picked for an interview along with a group. And he enters the interview room, sits with the group. And as Swami sits there, the first thing Swami says is not to the father, but to all the other members of the group. He says, you know that man? He's coming from London. Doctors say that his son has got cancer, but I am his son's doctor and I have cured that cancer. And you know, the father is in tears. And he gets up, goes close to Swami. Swami says, you don't worry at all. Materialist Vibhuti gives him and says, you give this to your child, he'll be fine. And then Swami says, in your back pocket, you have a letter, right? Give that to me. So he gives the letter. It's redundant because whatever he has written has already been answered here. That's it. The father returns back. And the son has gotten worse. The doctors recommend stronger dosage, greater chemotherapy. And the chemotherapy seems to be, you know, it's like what they do as war on terror these days. You know, go bombard a country. So you don't know whether the bombardment of the country does good for it or does worse for it. Many times we see that such kind of war on terror has resulted in worsening the situation before. So too it is with cancer treatments. You don't know whether it's better to live properly for 6-7 years with a cancer or undergo chemotherapy, extend your life by 3 more years and live a horrible life for 10 years. It's really a terrible thing. And even in the report, you know, the doctors have written that we give a 30 to 40% survival chance. We think that 30 to 40% is a good enough chance, but that 30 to 40% chance of survival for 5 years. That is what they had given Roshan. So see, taking all this into consideration, the parents said, you know, we just taper off and stop this medication. We don't want. We'll just give Vibhuti, that's it. That's all they did. That is all they did. 3 years later, that Dr. Tank has written herself the report saying that this child has been off medication for the last 2.5 years. And as I see him now, he's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong. Dr. Tank became a devotee. Became one of the active members serving in many medical camps in the UK. And by the way, Roshan Tora is a man in his 40s. Still comes to Prashanthilayam for darshan once a year. So you see, there's nothing impossible for God when we turn to Him as the first resort.
You are listening to the Thursday Live program on the Asia stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony. Stay tuned.
विद तुम्हें पुकारूं भगवन प्यारे मेरे साईं
किस विद तुम्हें पुकारूं भगवन प्यारे मेरे साईं
किस विद तुम्हें पुकारूं भगवन प्यारे मेरे साईं
किस विद तुम्हें पुकारूं भगवन प्यारे मेरे साईं
राधे श्याम हो सीता राम हो रहीमन हो या सीता राम हो रहीमन हो या किस विद तुम्हें पुकारो भगवन प्यारे मेरे साई राधे श्याम हो सीता राम हो रहीमन हो या राम।
वेलकम बैक डियर लिसनर्स, वी आर नाउ कंटिन्यूइंग with the talk by Brother Arvind of Team Radio Sai on the theme, Make Swami the First Priority in Life. This talk was delivered in the Satsang Hall here in Prashanthi Nilayam on the 11th of April 2016. Stay tuned.
Why don't we turn to Swami as the first resort? Because it, as I said, it's not as easy. On the face of it, it appears like escapism. I'm reminded of another experience of a student, you know. This was in 1969. On the 9th of June 1969, Bhagwan inaugurated a college for boys at Vrindavan, the Sathya Sai Arts and Science College. It was the second college to come up. The first one was at Anantpur. On the 22nd of July in 1968, Bhagwan had inaugurated that college. Of course, the buildings and the facilities, infrastructure, all came much later. When in Vrindavan the college was inaugurated, the boys would stay in a hostel which was more or less like a shed. There was nothing there, just an empty space, everybody living cramped together. But those were the most beautiful days, because on many occasions you would be waken up in the morning by Bhagwan. Swami would walk in. It was right beside his residence, the place where the Kalyan Mantap stands today at Vrindavan. That was the place where there was a shed. And the boys would do everything. They would take care of the cows, they would take care of the deer, they would do some farming, they would help in cooking, they had to manage by themselves. But they didn't mind at all, because Swami would join them in many of the activities, and it was unbelievable for them. Imagine Swami waking you up for Suprabhatam. Swami waking you up saying, it's time for you to wake me, you know. How beautiful it is. Swami joining in for the bhajan, Swami teaching the bhajans. Swami seeing how you are harvesting the crops. Swami teaching how to cook. Swami being there guiding you as you make the food. It was also beautiful. You know, fast forwarding a little ahead on a similar line, Dr. Ravi Kumar, who is currently the warden of the Vrindavan hostel, he was saying how during a summer course, when there was a kind of a debate as to who does better cooking, the boys or the girls? See, by default it will be the girls who will do better. Swami on behalf of the boys said, why, they will also make, boys also know how to make chapatis. Boys know, they will know how to make puris. And the next day Swami went to see, because he wanted the boys to keep up his word. And he saw there, as they were rolling the chapatis, there was Africa, there was Australia, there was Asia, amoeba, all unknown kind of shapes coming. To Swami who taught them, Swami said, do one thing. You roll that atta over this whole big slab of stone, you know, stone slab. So the atta was rolled on the whole stone slab. Swami brought a plate and Swami brought a tiffin dabba, a tiffin carrier cap. He said, if it's puri, you cut like this. If it's chapati, you cut like this. Then you will get perfect circles then to make puris and chapatis. And then, you know, you will be able to hold up my word. That was how, you know, this is much later, so you can just imagine how it would have been in the 69. So those were days of wonderful physical proximity, and the boys were enjoying it a lot. And then Swami said, you know, as the strength of the boys grew in 2-3 years, the college had more number of students, they were growing, and that accommodation was not sufficient. So Swami said, it's time now to build a hostel. If we look at any of Swami's projects, it has always been like this. Swami has started small and grown it organically on its own little, just like a child is grown. You know, you don't give birth to a 10-year-old and in next 2 years make him a teenager and then tell, chalo, let's start working. No, you spend 20, 22 years, let the child become an adult, 23, 24, then you start working. That's how Swami has fostered, be it the hospitals. Of course, the super speciality was built in 1 year, but the seeds were planted much before, 1956. Swami planted seeds for the general hospital. And it has evolved. Swami has ensured that there are people there to take care of the projects before starting the projects. Swami has always said that the greatest wealth is manpower. Humans, people are the greatest wealth. In fact, he turned the MBA course, he said it's not MBA, it's MMM. It's not Master of Business Administration, it's Master of Man Management. Swami said, man has all the ability, just learn how to manage men and everything will be done. It's not about any business, it's not profit, nothing of these. So too has been the case with the educational institutions. Swami started off small and then grew it. It's always been like this. So, when the hostel was needed, Swami called Colonel Jogarao and he told him to draw plans. Plans were drawn. By that time, a magnificent university building had come up, shaped like a big dam. Swami wanted it like that because he wanted it to show that it holds great potential. A dam holds great potential. It can supply, irrigate, bring rich harvest. The same potential can be used to generate electricity. Everything it can be done. So a usual dam holds water potential, this is holding human potential. So that was built. And so next to that college building, a hostel building plan was proposed. And Bhagwan was to go and do Bhumi Puja for that hostel building construction. That was when, you know, the students realized what was going to happen. From staying right next to Swami's bungalow, they would now be moving almost 200 to 300 meters away near the college. They didn't want a bigger residence. What to do now? You can go to Colonel Jogarao, you can go to the engineers, request them, can you change the site? You know, different students were trying different things. One of the boys decided to do straight away. What he decided to do was something straightforward, simple. Turned to Swami as his first resort. Why to go to any other thing? He wrote a letter to Swami. He wrote a letter to Swami and Bhagwan took that letter when Swami had come to that hostel. And he was reading the letter. After reading that, he turned to the boy and he asked, can I read this letter loud for everybody else? The boy said, yes, Swami. And Swami read out where the boy had written that, Swami, for us what matters most is you, Swami. You are there here for us. It doesn't matter what difficulty, nothing. We don't want a new hostel. But if, Swami, you have decided that you have to build a new hostel there, please build a new residence for yourself also there. Please come there. And Swami turned to Jogarao and said, see, Jogarao, what they're saying. What should we do now? He said, Swami, all plans are drawn. You have to do Bhumi Puja there tomorrow. And Swami turned to principal. That time, principal was, I think, Mr. Narendra. Swami asked him, Narendra, what do we do? He said, Swami, the boys, they're staying away from their parents. Swami is everything for them. You know their heart, Swami. Who am I to tell anything? Swami said, yes, yes. So let's build the hostel here only. So Colonel Jogarao said, where, Swami, where? Here means where? There's no space. We need space for a big hostel. It's not as if we can break down this temporary and break down the shed and build a hostel because the space is not enough. Where do we have such a big space? Those days it was Swami's bungalow. Next to Swami's bungalow, the shed. Next to the shed, one big tank, water tank, pond. Swami said, next to that, Swami, you want to build in the pond, in the tank. Yeah, we can build in the tank. You know, the most crazy idea, but that's where the Brindavan hostel currently stands. From outside, it looks like a three-story building. From inside, it's a four-story building. Because there's also a basement, because it was a tank. It was a 15 to 20 feet deep tank in which the hostel has been built. And yes, the most crazy, illogical thing, expensive it is to do all that, but none of that mattered. And God did it. Even to this day, the hostel stands there, thanks to that letter of that little boy. So as I said, turning to God works wonders. It works magic. But at the same time, it's not easy. That's why we are not able to turn to God always. Because though we can look at those who turn to God and say they are escapists, they are trying to run away from doing their efforts, turning to God as a first resort doesn't mean escapism. That's why the topic is making God the first priority and the first result. You can turn to God as the first priority, as the first result, only when you have God as the first priority. And what I'm stating now is not a condition. That is the way it is. Unless God is your first priority, you can't turn to Him as the first result. Because irrespective of how much ever theoretical knowledge I gain, I will always try to depend on my own strength, my own resources first, and turn to God only as the last resort. Because whether we accept it or not, God is not our first priority. Our own strengths, our own things, our own whatever, these are our first priorities, are our top priorities, and therefore we turn to them first and to God as the last resort. There's this anecdote, not an anecdote, the story of the captain of a ship. As he was, you know, as he used to take the ship in the seas, in the oceans, the passengers observed that this captain was a very religious person. Every day he says his prayers, without fail. And they used to wonder, you know, what is there so much to pray about? What is he praying so intensely about? But this captain would always pray. And then came that day when there was a storm in the sea. The waves became so huge, the ship began to rock. And the whole ship was praying now. And as the whole ship was praying, the only person who was not praying on the ship was this captain. He was not praying. He was steering the ship. And he managed to steer the ship out of the trouble. And then they asked him, they said, "Captain, every time you pray, and when we really needed prayers, you're not praying. What kind of logic is this?" The captain says, no, you're mistaken. I pray when the sailing is good. Because that time there's no need for me to do anything. The sailing is good. I've got a lot of time. I've got free time. I pray. And the prayers that I do when the sailing is good stands me in good stead when the sailing becomes bad. I need not pray at that time. Automatically strength is given and I'm able to navigate the ship. That is not the time for me to pray. That is the time for me to act. And I'll keep acting. I will do the work that is necessary. We do the other way. We are like the passengers of the ship. When the sailing is good, we just make merry. We just have fun. The smallest wave that hits the ship, we start to pray and say, "What is this happening?" Some of us don't do that also. There is a small wave. We have trust in the ship. We have trust in the captain. It's only when the waves become really big, we start turning to God. Kabir Das in his Doha says, "Dukh mein sumiran sab kare, sukh mein kare na koi." In times of difficulty, everyone prays. But in times of happiness, nobody prays. And the next line he says, "Jo sukh mein sumiran kare, dukh ka hai ko hoy." If you have thought of God in times of joy, why will you ever have sorrow? Like this captain. The captain was not panicked. Captain was not scared. Because he has thought of God in his good times. So he never has a bad time. The bad time is also a good time. The good time is when he thinks of the Lord. The bad time is when the Lord is thinking of him. That's all the difference for him. And so therefore, we can make God as the first resort in our life only if he is also the first priority in our life.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai.
Thank you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are now continuing with the talk by Brother Arvind of Team Radio Sai on the theme, Make Swami the First Priority in Life. This talk was delivered in the Satsang Hall here in Prashantinilayam on the 11th of April, 2016. Stay tuned.
And making God the first priority is easier said than done. The other day there was a talk on the three zeros. Where if we say, God, we cherish you the most, God takes away all the wealth and says, now do you cherish me or do you cherish the wealth? It's not that God is a sadist and he's trying to test us. He doesn't need to test us. He knows what our worth is. He knows what we want. And he knows that we are fooling ourselves by saying, God, we want only you. When we actually want something else. In order to show that to us, to tell us that you're theoretically seeking the right thing, but actually you're not seeking that, he takes away what we are seeking and says, see, this is what you are seeking, you're not seeking God. Because if you're truly seeking God, then you will never complain on health front, on the wealth front, on the relationship front, on any front. Because it doesn't matter, because that's not what I'm seeking. I speak over here, but the slightest of medical problems, the slightest of financial difficulties, and I'm so worried. Which means I'm just a good speaker. Like that speaker. The words that I speak are not coming from me, it's coming from him. That's what Swami told, you know. When Swami was once asking everybody, who was the speaker day before, who was the speaker yesterday, everybody is raising their, I'm the speaker. That is when the instrumental music that would play for 15 minutes before everyday bhajans began. Swami asked, from where is the music coming? Then the boy said, from the speaker. Swami, from the speaker. And he laughed because he thought, wow, you know, it was all speaker, speaker, and now again it's speaker. Swami said, no, it's not coming from the speaker. Yes, Swami, it's coming from the speaker. I'm not asking sound, I'm asking where is the music coming from. Swami, music lopal nunchi. Means from inside, Swami. Music, because inside the bhajan hall, the flutist or the sitar player would sit and play. Swami said, remember, you are just the speaker. Everything comes from inside. Not only the music, bhajan music, but whatever you speak, whatever you sing. It is the Lord who speaks. It is the Lord who inspires. And that is why sitting here and speaking, I'm in an inspired state. But when it comes to me, practically I forget. I forget and I take resort to my own intelligence, my own abilities, my own strength. That's why I fail. Because my strength is small, the Lord's strength is immense, infinite. The little girl Agnes, as a child, broke open her piggy bank. She had 3 pennies. And Agnes said that I want to take care of the poor and suffering people. And somebody laughed at her and said, Agnes, with 3 pennies you can't do anything. You can't do anything in this world with 3 pennies. She said, with 3 pennies I can't do anything, but with 3 pennies and God, there is nothing in this world that I cannot do. And Agnes Bojaxo today is known as Mother Teresa. She is a saint. That was how she started off. It is God actually that gives value and makes us do. And therefore it makes sense that we turn to him as a first resort. But for that we have to make him a first priority. Otherwise, I'm not saying that if we don't do that, God won't help. I'm just saying that it is not possible for us to sincerely take God as a first resort. When something is always not in the top of our mind, how can it suddenly become the top of our mind? That is what we learn from Ajamila's story. And Swami's take on that. Ajamila's story goes that he was a person who did a lot of good and then fell into bad ways. And when the time of his death came, he knew that he was going to go to hell. So he called out to his son because the messengers of death were coming. His son's name happened to be Narayana. And because he took Narayana's name, he was saved. This is a story that is quoted to say, if you take the Lord's name before you die, everything is redeemed. But if we study the Puranas, we realize that this Ajamila didn't get liberation instantly. He then realized the folly of the life he led so far. He was grateful to God for having given him another chance. And the next 2 decades of his life, he spent in intense austerity and penance, after which he got liberated. So, as a shortcut, as a way, as a marketing ploy, you know, for people to take up spirituality, it is said, you don't have to do anything. Just when you die, take the Lord's name, it's all fine. It's easier said than done. We experience temporary death every day, what we call sleep. What are our last thoughts as we go to sleep, as we drift to sleep? I have tried many times. I keep doing Namasmarana thinking of Swami, but somehow as the mind goes, as I'm feeling sleepy, the mind meanders. And the last thought before I sleep is not Swami. Unless the majority of my life is filled with Swami, the last thought before I sleep cannot be Swami. Statistically, if I have entertained thoughts of 100 things and one of the things is Swami, then before I sleep there is a 1% chance that I may think of Swami. So too, extending that analogy, before I die there is a 1% chance I may think of Swami. I may think of many other things. In order to think of the Lord at the moment of death, the whole life I have to be thinking of the Lord. As I said, just think of God before you die, it'll all be fine, is a marketing ploy. Once you join the company, you realize what all you have to do just to think of the Lord when you die. You have to spend your whole life thinking of the Lord. So too, it's easy to say that when any difficulty comes, just turn to God as the first resort. We won't be able to do it. We just won't be able to. We'll sit and say, Swami, you take care. And the next moment, our mind will be back, our brains will be back working out what we should do, which hospital we should admit, or what action should be taken, from where I should arrange a loan, whatever. Though I offered it to Swami to take care, I have taken it back on myself. It's like briefly showing it to Swami and taking it back. It's like the child, you know, who was taken on a horse carriage ride by his father. His father had this horse carriage, and as a child he would take him in the carriage for a ride through the roads, and this boy would enjoy it so much. Sitting in the carriage, the wind beating on his face, he's looking at the sights all around, it's magnificent, the feeling of speed, the thrill, it's all so enjoyable. Till he looks at his father who is holding the reins and controlling the horses. And he says, "Dad, can I do that?" Dad says, "Why you want to do that? Just enjoy the ride." So, "No, no, Dad, I also want to do. I can also control the horse. It's fun. I think it's fun." Dad says, "Okay, take it." So he takes the rein and he holds it. The instant he holds it, he feels so powerful. He's in charge now. I can take the chariot wherever I want. That's what he thinks. And then he realizes that his tiny hands are no match for the horse's strength. He is thinking he's in charge, but the horses are pulling him wherever they want to go. And the harder he tries to hold, the harder he hurts his hands. It's paining so much, he's not able to do it. And the dad starts crying. And the dad says, "Hey, don't worry," and takes over the reins. And the boy is back happy. He says, "Wow, this is fun." The wounds heal, his hands become fine. And his dad, "Can I hold again?" Because the child doesn't seem to be learning. That's what we do, you know. We think we are in charge, we take in charge, we get pained, we get hurt. We turn to God as a last resort. God comes to the rescue. And we then realize, yes, God is best. God, it's best that I hand over the reins of my life into God's hand. That conclusion holds good till the wounds heal. Once the wounds heal, my ego is back. I again feel I can take charge. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Swami, for carrying this load so far. Now put it back on. I can take over. I can take over now. What makes you think that you can take over? What makes us think we can take over? Therefore, you know, it makes better sense that we turn to God as the first resort. And as I said, for that, we need to make God the first priority. Without making God the first priority, it is impossible. Simply not possible. Because it will never happen. Let us look at our own lives. How many times have we been able to turn to God, irrespective of whether it's a happy situation or a sad situation? Oftentimes, when everything else fails, we come to Swami. Swami, everything else has failed, and we come to Swami. That is what Swami told in an interview to a classmate of mine. During the interview, Swami asked him, and I have quoted this so many times, because it's so powerful. Swami asked him, "Have you attended a wedding? Have you gone for a marriage?" "Yes, Swami." "Who is fed first in the wedding?" "Swami, the guests." In any wedding, it usually happens. The closer you are to the couple, either to the bride or groom, the later you will have your dinner or lunch. The less you know them, the faster you will have your food. If you don't know anything, the couple's brother's friend is some friend of yours, and he has said, "Just drop in." You just drop in. If the line is too long, possibly you don't even go on stage. You just say hi, hello to your friends there. Go have dinner and leave. Because you know what? The couple will not miss me if they don't see me also. It doesn't matter. But if you are the brother or sister of the bride or the groom, oh, you'll be having it much later. That's how it is in the wedding. So he said, first, the friends and guests are the ones who have food. After that, who has the food? Who has food? After that, it is the family that has food. After the family, or the closest ones. Then the bride and groom eat. They eat towards the end. Okay, after that? So, after that, everyone is fed. Yeah, everyone is fed, but food is still remaining. What you'll do? Ah, Swami, then everybody who has helped, you know, the workers in the kitchen, whoever is there, the management of that hall, there'll be some people. Everybody will call and, yeah, they'll have food. If food still remains after that, ah, Swami, we'll take it to the road and do Narayan Seva. This is how we do Narayan Seva. We finish all our desires, whatever is excess, that is Narayan Seva. I don't want to waste it. Narayan Seva is our spiritual equivalent of Quikr or OLX. What we don't want, we want to dispose and get some merit out of it. So we do Narayan Seva. I finish all my tax savings. I'm telling what I do. In the end, this will do. Yeah. I've done everything and now I need to get some more tax savings. So donate. Now tax saving done. Oh boy, I've done donation. If I wanted to do donation, first thing I should do as I get my salary is donate. But that's not my intention. I want to save tax there. At the same time, feel that I've done a donation. That's why we do. That's how we do. Swami, please, let me get this contract. If I get this contract, I'll give you 108 coconuts. Some elephant or what, Swami is, you know? We give him like this bribes. 108 coconuts. Why? Because I'm getting a 10 lakh contract there. I'll give you 1 lakh, Swami, if I get this contract. Some commission agent or what? That's how we do. You know, it's just that some kind of, we want to satisfy our own self that, I did good. That's why we say like this. That's what we do. We do at home. Food remains. In the end, what remains? Yeah, give it to the maid servant or go give it to the watchman. See, we're giving them such good food. They may never make paneer matar masala. Correct. They never make. We're giving them a chance to eat paneer matar masala. If you want to give them a chance to eat paneer matar masala, as soon as you cook, fill one dabba and give it to them. No. Let's all eat. If it remains, Tommy or Brownie at home will also eat. Still it remains, what to do? Let's give them pavam, they never get. Let them feed their children also. In fact, during 1975, the 50th birthday celebration, Swami made it very clear. He said, Narayan Seva, people translated as poor feeding. That's what it has become today, poor feeding. Once in a while you do feeding, that also you do it poorly. Poor not as to whom you are feeding, but to the quality of the feeding that you do. Poor it is, poor quality. How many times has Swami done this in the interview room where he has pointed out to a person saying for family you give 40 rupees rice, for Narayan Seva 15 rupees rice, correct? Poor feeding it is, because the quality of feeding you do is poor. In that discourse, Swami said, if you want to do Narayan Seva, from what you eat every day, take one handful and keep it aside, which means sacrifice that much. Instead of filling your belly 100%, fill it only 70%, keep aside 30%. Collect that over 1 month and give. It's not about affordability, it's about sacrifice. Because Swami says, nakarmana, not by actions, naprajaya, not with your progeny, dhanena, not with your wealth, tyagena, only by sacrifice can you get immortality. So it doesn't matter whether you are a millionaire, a multimillionaire, a billionaire. It doesn't matter whether you are giving one box of food, one sack of food. What matters is, are you sacrificing to give that? Instead of eating 5 biscuits, am I eating only 4 biscuits and giving 1 biscuit? That's a greater sacrifice than just giving 10 rupees. I can give 10 rupees, right? So I give 10 rupees and buy a biscuit packet and give. So when Swami says to do Narayan Seva, it's not to encourage equitable distribution of wealth in the world. It is to encourage sacrifice. When Swami encourages us to do sealing on desires, to control our desires, it is not because we should, you know, once it had happened like that, when Swami had said about sealing on desires, people said, yes, let us cut down our wastage. And whatever we are able to save by cutting down wastage of food, water, everything, let's put that to some good use. And one idea that came up was good use is let us donate it to Central Trust. So it started off as a good idea. Finally, it became like some kind of a, you know, meeting your targets. We have to donate this much, sealing on desire savings. That year, Swami just blasted away. He said, I don't want anything, return it back. To each state, how much ever was given, returned back. You take it and do some seva there. Swami said, don't think that the sealing on desires program has started as a way to get small deposits into the Central Trust. This is to encourage sacrifice in each individual being, because without sacrifice, you can't achieve the highest. You have to sacrifice. And you have to do it joyously. Just like the hand sacrifices for the leg. Each organ of the body does so much sacrifice for the other, gets nothing in return, apparently. But the hand, when it's serving the body, knows that in return it will get its blood free from the heart. It will get its energy free, what the mouth is eating. So, deep within the hand knows that I am not doing any service. I am just doing my bit to keep this machinery running. That's how we have to work. That's why sacrifice is important. Because it's our bit we do. We depend on so many others for all our things day to day. For the clothes we wear, for the food we eat. I am paying for it. You're paying for it, but somebody is growing and sacrificing. If we had only money, nothing would happen with money. That's what happens during times of war, right? When the society breaks down, you have nothing. Your money is absolutely useless. Your currency loses value. There's nothing. No police. It's jungle. It's a jungle out there. Anybody can hit your hand, take away your thing, go away. Nothing. What's the use of money then? The security that we have, the roads that we have, the infrastructure we have. It's all because of somebody else's sacrifices. So I too have to make my sacrifice. So Narayan Seva means sacrifice. It's not what remains after the bride and groom have eaten. But anyway, this boy said that. After they have eaten, Swami, we'll do Narayan Seva with them. After doing Narayan Seva, although if food remains, what you'll do? Oh, Swami, now, Swami, we throw, Swami. We throw to a place where, you know, crows and dogs will come. They will eat. And then Swami said, you know, when it comes to your love, Swami is like that crow and dog. You go and offer your love everywhere to people whom you know the least. People whom you love, you take for granted. And after having offered it to everybody, when you realize everything is false, then you come and say, oh Lord, you are my only refuge. Then what is the use? So I would say it is akin to offering a banana leaf on which all the food has been eaten and we give that to the Lord. When we don't give first priority to the Lord, we don't give any priority to the Lord. There's nothing like a second priority to God. It's either first priority or no priority. And Swami said, that's how it is. That's how you are. You are. You only see. You go behind a guy, you go behind a girl. That doesn't work out. You're in pain. Saying, brother, what should I do? This is what it is. This boy is from a good family. This girl is from this family. This brother. You're turning to Swami now. When you met that boy or a girl, you didn't have the wisdom to turn to Swami and seek His blessings. Now when everything is collapsing, you're turning to Swami. Medically also, in every case, God becomes our last resort because He's also possibly our last priority. Because if He's our top priority, He will be the first resort. First thing anything happens, I'll go and tell Swami only. Because that's how my priority list is. Anything that happens, I'm telling Swami. So naturally when something in quotes bad also happens, I tell Swami only. That's why I say it's not possible to make God our first resort unless He's our first priority. I used to think, you know, Swami, possibly my faith in You is not so firm. My faith shakes once in a while because somebody's suffering from a terrible disease. I prayed to You and now I don't know. You know, you'll do whatever is good for that person. So, if good for the person is to leave the body, I'm not happy with that, Swami. Because my prayer is that You should make him or her all right. That's where faith comes in, you know. Faith that the Lord knows what is good and He will do what is good. And that faith will keep me smiling whether that person is alive or dead. Because if the person dies also, it's for the good. So I'm smiling. Because I have complete faith that my Lord does everything for the good. But the thing is, I don't have that faith. That's why I feel that if He is saved, it is good. If He dies, it's bad. That's why on Radio Sai also, you'll see only articles where they prayed to Swami and Swami cured them. You'll never see articles where Swami, they prayed to Swami and that person died. Because we feel that, hey, no, if He died means it's a, hey, no, this is not a good story. Because, you know, Swami's grace is not seen. We think life is grace, death is not grace. It's built into us. As an institution, as an individual, as an organization, it's built like that. That's why we pick only those stories. And tell what in a worldly wise is a happy ending. For the soul, for all that we know, dying is good. But that's because, that's why I say we lack the faith. Whether we accept it or not, we lack the faith. Otherwise, we need not listen to a satsang and we need not tell somebody, tell me miracles of Swami. Miracles meaning, if you tell me, tell a miracle of Swami and I'll tell He was suffering from cancer. Doctor said it's no use. They came to Swami. Swami didn't look at them and the boy died. What is a miracle? There's no miracle there. It's a miracle. We feel it's a miracle only if he lives. Otherwise, it's not a miracle. Miracle is something that God does, right? So if he lives, it is what God has done. If he died, then who did it? This is not a miracle. No. Fine, your theory and all is fine, but don't talk such things in satsang hall. Tell only cases where his cancer got cured. But the reality is, for every one case of cancer being cured, there are 10 hundreds others which didn't get cured. Possibly they didn't pray with enough faith. Nothing like that. For every Wilma Rudolph who overcame polio and ran and won the Olympic gold medal, there are thousands others who have put in equal effort but have not won the gold medal. Have not yet been able to walk also. It would be wrong to say that you didn't pray enough, you didn't put hard enough efforts. It's wrong. It's not like that. But what is right to say is, that was Lord's will, this is the Lord's will, so it's wonderful. Whether you run or don't run, it's wonderful. And for that we need to have complete faith in Swami. So my thought was, Swami, how do I make you first priority when I don't have that faith in you? I claim to have faith in you, I say you're God, but I don't have that faith. Because I have my joys and sorrows. That's a simple thumb test. How to know whether I have complete faith? Do I have ups and downs in life, in my emotions? If yes, then I don't have faith. Because if I have faith, I should not have ups and downs. There's no need to be proud and excited, because that's the Lord's will. What is there about me? And somebody comes and tells, awesome speech you gave. Superb. Somebody comes and says, what you spoke is utter rubbish. You are one egoistic, bombastic fellow. What the hell do you know? When you criticize that, you are also egoistic. I get upset. I don't take everything. This is Lord's will. So there's nothing for me to feel happy about, because Swami wanted this person to say like this. There's nothing for me to feel sad about. Swami wanted this person to say like this. So the rule of the thumb to know whether I have complete faith is, if I have ups and downs. If I have ups and downs, I don't have complete faith. And faith is not an analog quantity. It's a digital thing. Either it is there or not there. So I can't say, yesterday I had 55% faith, today I am having 70%. No. Yesterday also I didn't have faith, today also I didn't have faith. So I was thinking, so Swami, how can I make you my first priority, though that's my desire to make you my first priority, if I don't have faith in you, if I don't have that faith? This also, thankfully, one of my classmates told it to Swami. He had this opportunity to push Swami's chair, and once when he was sitting and doing Pad Seva, he told Swami, I have a confession to make. Swami asked, what is that? He said, Swami, I don't think I have faith in you, Swami. And he thought he had landed a bombshell on Swami. He didn't know that Swami had planned a reverse bombshell. Swami said, you don't have faith. Do you love Swami? Swami, I love you, Swami. But sorry, Swami, I don't have faith. He was almost in tears. I don't have faith, Swami. Swami said, if you have loved me, that's enough. No need of faith also. No, that is the compassion of the Lord. I got my answer, because it's fine. Swami says, it's fine if you don't have faith. I know it's tough to have that kind of faith. If you just love Swami, that's enough. Keep that love for Swami in your heart. It'll all happen. That's what I assume. So, therefore, I am sincerely in my attempt, in my effort to make God the first resort in my life. In order to do that, I am in my efforts to make the God first priority in my life. In order to do that, I am trying to become a faithful person, to have faith in Him. But even if that doesn't seem to be succeeding, I know one thing for sure, that I love Him. And that is why always, whenever I get the opportunity, whether physically, whether in my dream, or in a talk like this where I know He's sitting and listening, I have only that prayer to make. Swami, let my love for you grow stronger with every passing moment. With that, thank you for your patient listening. Jai Sai Ram.
मैं गुलाम तेरा
Yeah.
बोलो जय सियाराम
पल हर क्षण राधे श्याम,
हर पल हर क्षण राधे श्याम।
श्री रघुनंदन सीताराम,
श्री रघुनंदन सीताराम।
मुरली मनोहर राधे राधे श्याम।